GM launches a car share service. Facebook opens a football stadium on your iPhone. And return your hoverboard to Amazon before it's too late. All that and more on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1433, recorded Thursday, January 21st, 2016. This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by PillPack, a full-service pharmacy that combines personalized service, convenient packaging, and modern technology to make your life easier. Visit PillPack.com/twit to save $20 on vitamins and OTCs when you transfer your prescriptions.
And by Credit Karma. This year, you may not make it to the gym every day, but you can work out your credit score with Credit Karma. Get your free credit report at CreditKarma.com and see why over 45 million people have joined. That's CreditKarma.com. Hello and welcome to Tech News Today. This is the show where we talk about the tech news with people who love technology. I am Megan Maroney.
And if they don't, we don't invite them on. I'm Jason Howell. How's it going? How's it going, Megan?
It's going good. We got this bigger TV here now.
Bezel-less. Almost to the edge. Mm-hmm. Isn't this what people are clamoring for in their phones? Well, we got it in a TV.
Yes, we do.
Kind of. I mean, although if this was the bezel on my phone, I'd be pretty upset. This is kind of a thick bezel.
Mm-hmm.
To phone standards, anyways. Love to welcome to the show Russell Holly of Android Central. He is our guest today. How's it going, Russell?
Hey, I'm doing good. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. I'm so used to having you on All About Android to talk about Android stuff. And we thought, hey, let's get you on to talk about all kinds of stuff.
Talk about everything.
No, it's like the world is open. It's your oyster.
Yes.
But before we get to everything, real quick, you wrote an article a couple of days ago that's been picking up a lot of steam on Android circles. At least, it, in my opinion, lends credence to my own suspicions about Facebook's Android app. You've noticed an improvement on your device from removing the app entirely. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, Facebook is always, kind of a hit or miss thing for me. I don't use it quite as much as I use maybe Twitter or Google Plus, but I keep it on there for family and, you know, check in pretty frequently there. And any time I find some kind of performance issue on any of my devices, I can usually, you know, check Facebook and see that, you know, an update recently caused something to misbehave. And for the longest time, I just kind of stopped it and you know, it would correct the behavior. But I was particularly annoyed with it over the weekend, and I uninstalled it and decided to just try using the browser for Facebook instead, and found I'd completely forgotten that Chrome does notification push now.
Right.
On Android, and so I could get all of my Facebook notifications, and so that experience ended up being just about the same for me.
Yeah, it really is close. The only thing that I noticed that's missing is the ability to kind of share to the Facebook app. If you have an image that you want to post, you can't really do that into, you know, the website. And I think even taking a picture, like I feel like I need to use my camera to take a picture and then launch the site and import that from the gallery. But so that's a couple of things, and that might be a deal breaker for some people, but I think
there. Facebook does a ton of things that is not just the social stream, location check-ins and stuff like that, a ton of people use and really enjoy. And that's one of the things that makes the app so popular, is that it makes those things kind of integrated and seamless. But for my purposes, I found that it fixed a lot of weird problems that I would find on either my phone or my tablet pretty much overnight.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah, it's interesting. When, you know, you see a headline like that, you think, oh, you're quitting Facebook. Like, I love your Facebook post, but you're not quitting Facebook, just the app.
Yeah, I don't think I could leave Facebook. I have family that use it, and I need to stay in touch with them, and I'm not always as good about calling them, you know, every couple of days as I should be. So that Facebook tether is going to stick around for a while.
Wait, we're supposed to call our friends and family every other day? I missed this memo.
I've got family that is so far away right now.
Yeah, I hear you.
People that are in Hawaii, actually, that I really enjoy keeping tabs on. So.
Yeah. Fair enough. Well, we'll talk about Facebook later, actually.
Yeah. So I have been noticing a new trend that I want to tell you about. I think car sharing is code for we are trying to push autonomous cars on you without you noticing. Mark my words. Today, GM announced its own car sharing service called Maven. It's meant to compete with Zipcar. Now, Maven is starting out in Ann Arbor, and that's in Michigan, obviously, but it will move to other places in the coming months. So it's $6 to use the car, and, you know, it's this idea of we don't really need a car, we can all share cars. But the more I read about it, the more I realized, like, this is really kind of just their foray, one of their many forays into just the autonomous car movement, I guess you call it. I mean, they've done so much lately to point to this, and it's interesting. So what do you think?
Well, they had the deal earlier this month with Lyft. That's the $500 million investment into Lyft. So obviously GM it has interests in autonomous. This, correct me if I'm wrong, this is more like you use an app to say, I want to, you know, basically rent that car for an hour, pick it up, keyless entry. You can actually have the app heat up the car for you while you're not there. There's no plans in this. And tell me if you saw this for autonomous driving inside those vehicles.
No, not right now.
You think
not
this is
right now?
This is a wedge into that.
I'm reading into the future.
Oh, okay.
This is
you're
their
looking into
future
the future
plan. Right, I think it's Uber's future plan too. Like
sure.
I think it's everybody. You know, the whole auto industry. I think so. Yeah, it competes with Zipcar, but unlike Zipcar, you don't need a membership for this one too. So.
Yeah.
Well, you got to figure the most important thing for any of these services right now, especially as you move into building autonomous car services, is measuring data, like gathering the kind of information that you need to figure out how people are using their cars. And this is a perfect service for that. Like you have someone who is sharing cars and driving in, you know, major metropolitan areas. Gathering that kind of data is hard to do one-on-one. But if you have your own car service, then that location data becomes yours to, you know, do with as you please. And that makes, you know, figuring out how to build those driverless cars in those areas a little easier.
Yeah.
Yeah, they also announced a deal with Mobileye. That's how they were tracking all of this data to work on the autonomous technology.
I like the fact that all the vehicles are going to support CarPlay, Android Auto. They're going to have Sirius. They're going to have 4G LTE. So these are like souped up cars. Like you get in, you know your platform is going to be supported. So.
So, oh, but you have a car. This is not really, this isn't your lifestyle. The
now it
sharing.
Isn't, but you know, like 10 years from now, who knows? I mean, I don't know. I'm pretty locked into owning a car right now, but the trend right now seems to be away, or at least the potential trend, away from ownership and more into this kind of sharing economy. So who knows? 10 years from now, I could be sharing someone's vehicle. So doubtful at this point that would be the outcome, but you never know.
Well, it's just all these services are aimed at people that don't live the lifestyle that we do. I think,
yeah,
you know,
I
with
suppose.
You know,
that's
big
true.
Cities and urban areas, and but yeah, it's you can dream.
Yep, an Oracle lawyer let loose a juicy bit of information about Google's Android that Google says should never have been released. That Android has brought in revenue to the tune of $31 billion, as well as $22 billion in profit. Google says the information was derived from its confidential internal financial documents as part of course, Oracle's lawsuit against Google that's accusing the company of using parts of Java to create Android without paying to do so. We don't really know if this is gross or net, and I don't know. You know, Russell, I'm very curious to hear kind of your thoughts on this, if you think this is a low number or on par with what you would guess.
Well, I think that we know that Google doesn't make any money from hardware sales or anything like that. So to hear that number from, I guess, the beginning of Android's existence for something like advertising and Play Store sales, I think sounds, you know, fairly accurate. When you think about how many transactions happen on Google Play every day and all of the different Android phones and tablets that are out there, it makes sense that, you know, all of those little things would come together to make this big thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you can contrast it by saying The Verge contrasted it. Said Apple made $32.2 billion in revenue just in the fourth quarter of last year from the iPhone.
As a company.
iPhone. But that's iPhone sales. Like okay, that, you know,
right.
That's the physical.
Right,
they're
the
selling
hardware.
The physical hardware. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's the real difference between the two companies, which is interesting. I also think it's interesting that they just slipped these numbers out that were, I mean, I don't know if it was on purpose, if this was the way they thought that they were going to get at Android for, you know, that Oracle was going to get at them for stealing what they claim, stealing the JavaScript to build Android. So I don't know. It seems interesting and suspect.
Well, it's certainly Oracle doing what they need to do in regards to the case, right? Like, they want to prove that Google's made a crazy sum of money, you know, based on, you know, this illicit code that they shouldn't have ever had access to. So it certainly benefits Oracle to do that. Should be noted that Google acquired Android in 2005 for $50 million. And when you take $50 million, compare it to the the $31 billion now, that's a pretty good return on your investment, I think. So, you know,
and that's just from direct revenue for things like advertising.
Sure.
You're not even counting in the sheer amount of data they've gotten from web searches and location data and stuff like that, which has benefited all of their other products. So, right.
But they do hold these numbers really like close to the vest. So it's interesting to hear about them and wonder if they're true.
Yeah.
So Apple is opening a new developer center in Naples, Italy, to offer a more diverse community of people the tools to become iOS developers. The center is the second of its kind. There's also one in Brazil. So this was an interesting story. It's just trying to sort of create more iOS developers in different parts of the world. And this is the first one in Europe. And what do you think?
I mean, honestly... I'm all about education for development, and I think, you know, I think it behooves them to do this, right? It's not like iOS as a platform is hurting for high-quality development, but all Apple really wants is to encourage more people to use the platform, to open up that development. I think Google does a pretty good job of this, too, for Android. They certainly have their hooks in to kind of encourage development and kind of spread that out with the Udacity thing that we were talking about, among other places. I think it's interesting if this is kind of the start of something bigger, because Apple certainly has said, at least in this news, that we could see more centers like this to encourage this kind of education. I like it. I think that's good.
Yeah, I mean, whether it's Android or iOS, the more people, the more different types of people that are creating the apps, the better our world will be.
Our world, in the technology world, maybe.
Well, no, I mean, these apps affect everyone everywhere.
Sure.
I mean, they really do. I mean, more and more people, you know, have mobile phones, only have mobile phones. They don't even have PCs. So really, they affect every aspect of our life. And so if it's just a bunch of guys in Silicon Valley creating these apps, then, you know, there's a problem there.
Mm-hmm. Let's see here. Once known as Google's Bad Ads Report, the newly released and cheerfully renamed Better Ads Report was released today. Still basically shows you how much bad stuff Google removed from its ad system. And it's all kind of good news, of course, and thankfully for Google. 780 million bad ads blocked in 2015. That's up from 524 million the year before, 350 million the year before that. One thing that was big about last year, and one thing that I really applauded Google for going after, was this kind of trick-to-click kind of system where, you know, you might have the X to close an ad right next to the thing you actually want somebody to click on, or the X might be really small, you know, the click target would be really small to remove it, and instead you end up clicking it and they end up getting ad revenue as a result of that. 17 million ad rejections on that, those types of ads alone. All good news. Would you say, Russell, just kind of in your experience with things, that this has been a better year as far as ads and kind of the yucky type of ads that we find on our mobile devices?
Well, it's hard to say, because, you know, on top of all of those, you know, you run into a lot of ads that aren't Google ads. You know, there are plenty of ad networks that aren't maintained by Google. So I don't know. I would certainly say that, you know, in situations where I can say, well, this is a site that uses Google's ad network, then yeah, those ads have been great. But I don't think a lot of people surf the web, and even, you know, highly technical people surf the web and are aware of where those ads come from as soon as you see them. So it's hard to measure, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I was trying to ask you. I was like, I don't really know if I understand how Google's ad network works. I mean, there's different networks that you can join into, so that app developers can join into, or websites can join into. And then why do they choose these different networks?
Like which networks? Do you mean like Android as a platform?
No. Like there was, it's like Mob something, and then like the Google network. Yeah. Like there's these very specific ones. I guess they choose it based on what how much money they're the percentage they're going to get.
Yeah,
I'm not sure. It's a mystery. I mean, they want it to be a mystery, right? Like they don't want to. It's like the numbers. They don't necessarily want to reveal
too much.
Yeah, and again, it also you know shows the difference between Apple and Android. In this case, you know, Apple just kind of threw everything into disorder with you know having iOS 9 have ad blocking included in it, mm-hmm. so that now everyone's just like, okay, well, you know, how are we going to do it then? And then with the last week's news about iAd going away, I mean, that's confusing too. I mean, we were wondering what that story meant too. First, we thought, oh, well, they just realized they can't, Apple can't really do advertising as well as Google, so they'll just pull back and not do it. But then, you know,
publishers take care of it themselves.
Right. But then there's also this underlying story of like, are they trying to get that pie for themselves, that Google advertising money pie for themselves? There's also that people are making that argument. That's what they're after. So it's really mysterious.
It is mysterious. Ultimately, obviously, Google's biggest interest is in driving people to their search so that they can serve up ads. So, you know, like when you're using the Android platform, not only are you getting ads when you're serving, you know, inside a browser or whatever with mobile ads targeted there, but you're also getting it inside the apps themselves, the full screen takeovers. And that's a part of what this kind of report is referring to, you know, kind of better ad practices there so that everybody makes a nice chunk of money. And I don't know, the report seems to be all good news.
So I support better ad practices.
You support good report.
I do.
I do too.
So if you bought a two-wheeled hoverboard, Popular Mechanics says that Amazon will take it back and refund your money, you know, because they might explode and set your house on fire. The Consumer Product Safety Commission says they're actively investigating some companies who make the hoverboards and then that Underwriters Laboratory, that UL symbol that's meant to imply safety on devices should not be an indication to consumers of the product safety. Yeah, this has been an interesting story. I had three children who really wanted hoverboards. And I did not get them for them. So I've been really,
good move.
You know, I've been like, but they're set on fire. They're dangerous. You can't use them anywhere. But lots of things are dangerous. People fall off of bikes and trees and everything.
Sure.
So, but yeah, I don't know. What's your take on the exploding hoverboards controversy, Russell?
I don't think I've heard of a lot of bikes exploding. But yeah, this whole, the hoverboard craze, it's really crazy how quickly it picked up and how quickly it went away. And this is the, you know, the fascinating thing about, you know, how quickly we can saturate a market as a culture right now with, you know, new products that come from all over the world, really, not just China. A lot of articles have tried to pin this on manufacturing exclusively from China. But, you know, it's, I think the most interesting part of this was, you know, something was this interesting idea came up and just dozens of other, you know, very similar products happened almost immediately. To you know, available to purchase and available to ship, you know, just about overnight. And so it makes me wonder, you know, what the next thing like this would be and how it would be better regulated.
Yeah, they didn't have their patents in order. I think that was the issue. Like if they had, you know, before it came out, if they had patented a lot of this technology, that this wouldn't be a problem.
There wouldn't be a number of other companies sitting in the wings going, we've got to capitalize on this trend and put something out quickly. Who cares if they explode?
Yeah.
Yeah, like a Santa Rosa man's house caught fire. His charging hoverboard set the house on fire. You know, this kind of stuff happens apparently. So,
well, I'm thinking my issue with
it's not just people like in the video. There's somebody standing on a hoverboard revving it at full speed and just waiting until it explodes. Like that's an example of the fact that it can happen. This is a real world example. And that's
yeah.
pretty scary.
I think it can happen. I also wondered like if kids are anything like mine, they get tired of things very quickly. So I think, well, that's great. Like even if it didn't explode, they're probably already tired of it. Return it to Amazon. Buy yourself a couple GoPros. That's what I say.
It's like you got a free month's rental of a hoverboard.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Think of it that
way. Consider yourself very lucky if nothing happened.
Yes. Now, I've seen a ton of alarm clock apps for Android. Some of them make you jump through hoops, sometimes literally jump through hoops in order to turn off the alarm. Then along comes that scrappy upstart Android developer called Microsoft with its mimicker alarm trying to bring some fun to your morning wake-up call. First things first, do we want to have fun in the morning when we wake up? Or do we just want to wake up and like begrudgingly get to our morning routine?
I want to go back to sleep when I have to wake up.
Fun in the morning, Russell, yay, nay.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of a morning guy. It doesn't usually take me much to get up. So I don't know about having fun as soon as I wake up. But yeah, I know. Definitely, like, the alarm goes off and I don't like groan and try to punch my phone or something. It's
You might want to punch your phone.
This might make me want to punch my phone.
Yes, exactly. This might be responsible for many people throwing their phone out the window. It essentially asks you to mimic a few things. That's why they call it the mimicker alarm. The first one is you mimic a selfie. So it tells you something like, mimic a happy face. And this is when your alarm goes off, right? So you wake up in the morning, it says, mimic a happy face. And you have to look into the camera and give a happy face in order for it to basically turn off the alarm. And then by that point, you're awake. I tried this before the show. It said, make a disgusted face. I'm pretty good at making faces. I made a disgusted face. It said, be more disgusted. So I tried that, and then it said, you're too angry. So then I changed it. It said, you look surprised. And then at that point, it crashed. So I don't know what to tell you, but I guess at that point, I'd be awake and mission accomplished.
And when it crashed, did the alarm stop?
So the alarm isn't going off while this is happening.
Okay.
So the alarm, you actually swipe to turn it off. And then it gives you this kind of challenge to kind of move on. That would make it a lot more intense if it just kept ringing.
Right. That was what's the incentive there? Yeah. If I'm awake, I'll just force close the app and go back to what I was doing.
Exactly. Believe me, there's plenty of ways around this stuff. Color captures match a color. So find something green and take a picture of it. That works for me. Tongue twisters repeat a phrase. Using voice entry, so it'll give you a thing like Peter Piper picked a peck of pickled peppers and blah, blah, blah. And you have to, say it, and the voice dictation will actually translate. And what's interesting about this is actually at a deeper level, why are we even talking about it? It's kind of an integration of some of Microsoft's kind of experimental projects like the Project Oxford API, which is all of its kind of cool computer learning around facial detection, expression, all that kind of stuff integrated into this alarm clock app, which seems so kind of ridiculous at first glance, but pretty cool.
Yeah, so that, like, those apps that were like, how old are you?
Yes,
are
exactly. We twins? They've got a lot of practice in, like, this, right? Those.
Yeah, they're just trying stuff out on us, I think. But yeah, it's from Microsoft Garage, which is their experimental place. With a lot of interesting apps have come out of there.
They've put out a lot of interesting stuff on Android, which makes you, which they don't end up releasing on the Microsoft Windows Phone platform.
Yet.
So it's kind of weird.
Yet.
Just put a case on your phone before you try it.
And maybe like a bungee cord and attach it to your wrist. So if you are tempted to throw it, it comes right back to you. All right. Coming up, we're going to talk with Kurt Wagner about Facebook's upcoming sports feed. But first, let's take a minute to thank the sponsor of this episode. It's PillPack. Think of it as the antidote to you having to get your butt into a crowded pharmacy and deal with all the headaches there, dropping off the prescription, having to wait for that prescription, maybe wandering the aisles for 20 to 30 minutes until they finally get around to filling your prescription and giving you what you came in for. I know I've been there, and it's no fun. Here's the solution to that. It's PillPack. It's a full-service pharmacy that takes care of everything for you. They pre-sort and deliver your medications and vitamins in, I have them right here, these easy-to-tear packets. So basically, you end up getting the box, and every day is labeled, as you can see right there. You just tear it off, and you got everything you need for that day. It's labeled date, time, each dose, so you no longer have to kind of keep track of all that stuff and use that Monday through Sunday pill box in order to do it. They do this by using those things you've heard of, robots and digital imaging technology, to do all the work, along with pharmacist oversight, and that's to ensure the accuracy of every pill pack. Their pharmacists are available 24/7 from the privacy of your own home, so you no longer need to have those awkward pharmacy encounters. They proactively call your doctor for you to manage all your refills so you never run out. There's no extra cost beyond your standard copays, of course. Shipping is always free and is compatible with most major insurance plans, including most forms of Medicare Part D. When you sign up for PillPack, they make sure that your insurance is compatible before they transfer any of your medications over. Now, switching is easy. You sign up with their secure site, and they take care of everything for you. Recognized by Time Magazine as a top 25 invention, Jill Duffy gave it a great review in PC Magazine. You should check that out. There's also a PillPack medication reminder app for the iPhone and Apple Watch. PillPack is medication simplified. You will not believe how much easier and more convenient it is until you've actually tried it yourself. So here's what you should do. Visit pillpack.com/twit to to sign up right now. Their site is awesome. It only takes 5 minutes to sign up. And when you use our link and transfer your prescriptions to PillPack, you're going to get a credit for $20 worth of vitamins and OTCs. That's pillpack.com/TWIT. And we thank PillPack for their support of this show.
So Facebook is opening a stadium, a sports stadium.
What? Where?
Not a real stadium. A virtual
Oakland?
One.
Oakland?
No.
Oh, okay.
In your phone.
Oh, okay. That makes more
It's
sense.
A virtual stadium. It's a dedicated place to experience sports in real time with your friends in the world. And unlike a real stadium, you can't actually watch the sports. But joining us to explain what's going on here is Kurt Wagner, reporter at Recode. Welcome, Kurt.
Got it eventually.
I did. Yeah, that's a lot of R's and W's. Yeah. And so what can we expect from Facebook's new feature?
The stadium that you mentioned. So it's part of the Facebook app. There was some confusion I saw yesterday that this was a standalone app, but it's actually part of the existing Facebook app. And what it is it's a section of the app where you can go and follow along a live game that you may be watching on television. So they're launching it before the NFL playoff games that are going to be happening on Sunday. So you could be watching the game on TV, and then on your phone, you could go and you could check stats. You could see what your friends are saying about the game. You could see what, you know, quote unquote, experts are saying about the game, watch some video. So the whole idea is it's a companion to live TV. And right now they're going to launch it with the NFL playoffs, but eventually they're going to be doing it for pretty much every sporting event. So every Major League Baseball, every NBA game. So the idea is that, you know, hopefully people will go here and follow the game on Facebook while they're watching the game in their living room.
So this is just for major sports, I assume. I am attending, lucky enough to attend the U.S. women's soccer team game in San Diego
nice.
On Saturday. I probably can't expect to go to Facebook and find a place where everyone's talking about it.
Yeah, on Saturday, I would say no, because they're just launching it with the NFL guys on Sunday as kind of the first test. A year from now, though, I would think you would be able to. They say that they basically want all professional sports on there, and I imagine that includes not only professional soccer, but kind of national soccer, World Cup soccer. I think at some point that will be available. I just don't think it'll happen by Saturday.
Okay, I guess I'll have to talk to real people about it then.
Yeah, talk to yeah, keep the stats on your own, I guess.
So I don't really, aside from women's soccer, I don't watch a lot of sports. What do people do now before this, in the olden days, before this new stadium? where did people go to do this?
Well, I go to Twitter, honestly. When I follow a game on television and I want to see what people are saying about it, I pull out the Twitter app. And typically, my feed is, you know, especially if it's a big game like the NFL playoffs, my feed's going to be full of people talking about that game. I think that is one of the places that should be probably on alert with this new product from Facebook is, you know, a bunch of people were joking. They were saying, this is sports Twitter on Facebook now. I don't think Twitter should necessarily be super scared, because Facebook has tried a lot of things in the past to get people to talk about live TV, and it's never really caught on. You know, like Twitter has that feeling, it's public, it's real time, the stream is in reverse chronological order. Facebook typically doesn't have any of that, so I don't think people are trained to go to Facebook to talk about things that are happening in real time. But I think that's what they want to change. So Twitter should be alert. And I think others, you know, like an ESPN, for example, I have an ESPN app on my phone. That's where I mostly get all kinds of stats and highlights right now. Perhaps in the future, I may use Facebook for that kind of stuff. I haven't decided yet, but I guess I'll find out on Sunday how good of the experience is.
So right now, Facebook is pretty good at knowing what I want to see and what I don't want to see, but it still thinks that I like to see everybody talking about football when they're watching football. Will I see less of this? I mean, will that go from there, from like my feed to this other area?
I don't think that it's going to impact what you see in your news feed. At the beginning, in fact, I don't know this. I would think you might actually see more sports in your news feed as they're trying to draw attention to the fact that this is a new product. Oftentimes when they launch something new, you know, they'll have an alert or maybe I'll make a comment on the game. It'll show up in your feed and there will be a prompt, you know, see what other people are saying and go check that out. My understanding is that the news feed is totally separate than this experience. And therefore, I would guess things that are popular would show up in news feed the same way they always have, because they can't really assume that everyone's going to go to this new stadium. And so they want to continue to give people the same content they're used to seeing. So unfortunately for you, that might mean that you're going to get the same amount of sports that you already see. But perhaps, I don't know, if this really does catch on, people will know where to go and they'll comment over there and you'll be safe.
Yeah, I do wonder if this leads eventually to kind of similar sections for other things, right? Like you've got live sports in its own feed that takes off. And obviously that's the kind of event that can be a worldwide shared event, depending on how big the game is. But you know, like a live TV or something along those lines, you kind of wonder if Facebook's going to go that route. Anytime you're splintering off people from something they're used to doing, let's say the main feed, and well, now take what you would normally do here and go do it over there, though, that kind of gives me a little bit of pause. I wonder if people are really going to end up following through on that, against the habit that they already have.
Mm-hmm. I think the big thing there, though, is the real-time communication and having the kind of communication that you see on Twitter with that reverse chronological order. It's when you watch a big game on Facebook or what other people are watching the big game on Facebook, I will still see people talking. I will see posts from people talking about it, halfway through the next day. When I refresh Facebook and those posts from the night before show up in the feed. And I think that's a big part of the disconnect there, for knowing that there are people there talking about the same thing that Twitter has going for it. If Facebook can create this silo where people are communicating, maybe not in real time, but very close to about the sport and the team that they're a fan of, then, it probably has a much higher chance of being successful and more comparable to Twitter than you would see from the normal Facebook feed. And maybe silos like that for other major events would be, a big deal because of that, because it would allow that kind of communication to happen instead of breaking everything up so that you see it 12 hours later.
Mm-hmm. So at the beginning of the show, we were talking about how Russell had deleted the Facebook app from his Android phone. Is this just in the app for now, or will it be on the website also, the Facebook website?
Chaos. Someone deleted the Facebook app. Oh, my God.
And he's not giving up on Facebook. Let's be clear. He loves Facebook, but just not the Android app.
And we're all still here. Wow. no, it's so for right now, it's only going to be for iPhone users. It will be on the web, I believe, by the Super Bowl. So that should be in about 2.5 weeks. And then it'll be on Android sometime after that. Android, unfortunately, Android users always seem to get things much later than everyone else. But iOS, iPhone for now, then the web in a few weeks, and then Android following up behind that.
All right, I have one last question before we let you go. So we talk a lot, you and I talk a lot about Twitter trying to look a lot more like Facebook with moments and changing like the stars from favorites to likes. Do you see a lot of that going the other way where Facebook is trying to be more like Twitter?
You bring up a great point, and it's pretty ironic, right? Like Twitter is now experimenting with inserting tweets that don't follow that reverse chronological order system that they've had all along. They're now saying like, oh, well, maybe we'll use an algorithm to insert the popular stuff up top. And here we have Facebook saying, well, forget the algorithm. We're just going to give everyone stuff in these sections as it's shared. So I found that pretty humorous yesterday, I guess last night or this morning as well. I think the key here is the television component, right? So where can companies like Facebook and Twitter get people talking about one specific thing that's happening right now and then go to advertisers and say, hey, do you want to reach 60 million people that are talking about the Super Bowl? Well, look, we have all of their content in this one silo right here. And this is a better place for you to, you do your video ads than on TV. I mean, maybe the Super Bowl is a bad example, right? But for most games, there's a chance there might be more people following along on Facebook and Twitter than actually tuning in and watching. So I think that all of this timeline, chronological order, all of that aside, the point is to gather people around one event in one place so that these companies can go out to advertisers and say, if you want to reach the audience, we have them. They're all right here, and they're all talking about it on our platform.
Well, Kurt, thank you so much for joining us. Kurt is a reporter at Recode at KurtWagner8 on Twitter, where he watches a lot of football, and you can join him there and Facebook soon.
All day.
Thanks, Kurt.
Thank you, Kurt. All right. Hey, we got an email to tnt@twit.tv from Dr. David Stevenson. on a couple of points regarding a few recent topics on the show. And he says, first, the dangers of drones. Says, have you all seen the video of the skier almost being hit by a large UAV? Here's the link. This is serious business. He could have been killed. So he's, you know, going down. I think you actually...
We did show this last month when it came, when we saw the video.
When it happened.
When so it, he's, the couple...
Oh, my God.
It's super like, scary. So, we definitely have talked about this, this danger of drones. It is a real danger, but so is getting in a car and,
sure.
A hoverboard.
So he continues, much more serious business sooner is this slideshow that we have, which is basically a drone in the sky. And you see an oncoming airplane in the distance. And, you know, sure enough, the last frame is that the drone gets basically knocked out of the sky. I'm not sure if it actually got hit by the plane or if that's just kind of the reaction, you know, all the turbulence created by the plane passing by so quickly. But his point is basically that, you know, regulators eventually are going to have to come down pretty hard on UAV and, you know, these unmanned vehicles flying around, because right now it's potentially, you know, an incredibly dangerous scenario. What do you think about this, Russell? Is this a danger that we're going to have to face sooner rather than later? He's afraid that it's going to result in many casualties at some point, and that's going to force big change.
Well, I think that it's probably going to start off by being regulated in very much the same way that we see high-powered lasers. I live about a mile and a half from a pretty major airport, and I got a 1-watt laser as a gift a couple years ago, and I couldn't ever take it outside because I'm too close. Just the act of pointing it into the sky and lighting it at any point in the day was, considered very, very dangerous. And so I was given pretty strict warning when I bought it that because I was so close to an airport that kind of thing would be a problem. And the same thing goes for, owning a drone and flying it this close to the airport. You know, if I go above a certain height, then it can be considered very dangerous. And there are very, real consequences for being caught doing that. I don't think that there's a reasonable expectation for there to be a 100%, to stop anything from happening ever. But I think that we're already heading in the right direction for, kind of regulating these things and putting rules on them for people who, have to know where to use them and when.
Right.
Well, there's the FAA registry, which if you want to register your drone for free, you're too late for that. Now you have to pay. That deadline passed just this week. But I don't, it's weird. People who have gone through the process here say it's just very strange. You get a number and then you have to put it on your drone. It's up to you to put it on your drone, the number. Like no one, I don't know how else they would do it. But, and I think that.
Assign you a number at the counter. Apply it to the drone
as
you're leaving the
store.
I don't know.
At least, like, maybe, I don't know how they could do it differently. I don't think that it's great right now. I don't think it's making anything any safer. But I do think that they're, his argument was regulators will come down on the UAV world. I think they sort of already are, but doing it, and I guess the best way possible, but it seems weird right now the way they're doing it.
Today is actually the last
today
day.
Today is the last
yes,
day.
Yes, Reverb Mike, thank you in the chat room, but I just checked it out, and today is the last
okay.
day to register.
Today is
so
the day.
If
so if you're watching
this
right now,
it's too late. Probably too late.
It's $5 after that. So,
yeah.
But yeah,
there
it's, I mean, anyone who's been through the process says it's a little bit complicated. And then there's just this idea of like, what? So I have to put the number on myself and you're just trusting me to do it. So mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know.
All right.
Well, after the break, we will try and uncover the mysterious case of a house haunted by geolocation. But first, let's take a minute to thank Credit Karma. This episode of Today is brought to you by Credit Karma. Now, most people do not know their credit score, and who can blame them? Many of the websites that offer credit reports are confusing, and they come with weird hidden fees that you don't find out until later. Credit Karma does things differently. They offer truly free credit reports with no strings attached and no credit card required. Credit Karma doesn't just show you a score and then send you away. They actually break it down so you can see how your actions can affect your score for situations like you use too much of your credit limit and then your score goes down. In honor of the upcoming Super Bowl, Credit Karma did some research into what they're calling the credit fumble. According to Credit Karma, only 28% of people surveyed received some type of personal finance education before college, with the majority of that education, 58%, coming from parents. Now, more than two-thirds of people surveyed, that's 69%, did not properly understand what credit scores were when they got their first credit card. And 73% said that better financial education could have prevented them from making credit-related mistakes. With better education and learning tools for those of you currently borrowing money and for those of you about to be credit eligible, that's all young adults out there or parents of young adults, the cycle of credit fumbles can be broken. Credit Karma can be part of the solution. Since 2014, they've worked directly with colleges and university students across the country to educate students early in their credit life cycles. They have something called the Campus Challenge and the Student Ambassador Program that's helped a lot of people understand credit. Thinking about your credit score is not the most exciting thing to be thinking about, but it is essential, and Credit Karma makes it fast and easy so you can get on to the more exciting stuff of life. You can even use the service on your time, whenever you want, wherever you want, on your iPhone or your Android phone with a free Credit Karma mobile app. It's no wonder 45 million members turn to Credit Karma to check their credit score. Visit creditkarma.com right now to get your free report. Feel more confident about your finances this year. Get your free credit report today by visiting creditkarma.com right now. And we thank Credit Karma for their support. And tech news today's fan of the day is Sean, or at Shaw44 on Twitter, who apparently likes to kick off those shoes and relax while he watches the show. That kicked up feet and socks has been somewhat of a theme. We see a lot of those photos.
We see a lot of these.
I guess we're very relaxing to people. That's
all right. Hey, if that works for you, then great. I also really like the John Lennon skateboard on the wall.
I like that too. That is nice.
Nice portrait.
Mm-hmm. Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video of yourself. Take a picture of your setup. Take a selfie. Post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, or Facebook. Use the hashtag HowIWatchTNT. We will find it. We love getting them. Thank you so much for sending them.
Yeah, thank you for that. All right. Kashmir Hill at Fusion wrote a piece about a couple in Atlanta that has gotten used to random knocks at the door from people claiming that they're tracking their lost or stolen phone to their house. I feel like we hear about this every once in a while, but this one's kind of crazy. More than a dozen times in the past year, basically, since last February. Two times already this month. They've had police, like, show up investigating them because of a missing person's / phone. You know, basically, they track the missing person's phone to this house, and they show up and pull them out of the house and, you know, do the full-on investigation. It's happening on all carriers, so it's not a carrier specific thing. It's happening on all four major carriers. And I don't know if you could imagine, like they aren't going anywhere. This is the family home. The family owns the home. They're letting, you know, their son or their daughter and their partner live there. So, I mean, unless they choose to, you know, move out and rent, because maybe they're not paying rent or whatever the case may be, but still. Could you imagine if you chose a place and it happened to be the place that, like, location data defaults to? Like, that would just be miserable. What do you think, Russell?
It's a weird, weird thing to think about, especially since, you know, anybody who has lost their phone and uses one of those location things, like, there, when you see that thing show up on the map, there's, like, hope that that, you know, you can go and get your phone or your tablet because it's powered on and it's in this location, and, you know, hopefully it's not, you know, being held by someone who swiped it from you. And to go there and to have these people just be exhausted by, you know, having to deal with this, I can only imagine that being so frustrating for everyone.
Right. I mean, if you thought and you had almost, you were going to vigilante justice, you were going to go find your phone and you ended up there and they said, oh, this happens all the time. Like, that's also a great excuse. You know, if you were going to.
That's exactly what I would say.
Right. That's what I would say.
I'm like, looking for stolen phones.
Sure. I mean, it's a little. Yeah. It's a little scary for them, they said, you know, because people can be violent when we're very attached to our devices, and, you know, we think we have these tools to find them, and we trust tools more than people in cases like this. You know, what do you mean it's not here? I get to check under your bed because it says it's here.
Yeah, pretty interesting. So GPS data. So basically, Kashmir talked to, you know, a bunch of different people to try and figure out, like, how you would figure this out. No one knows, even the people who are used to, you know, who have history in kind of like forensics of this type to kind of figure out and track the basis for this stuff. Basically, when geolocation of this type happens, it's first GPS data, then cell tower connections are checked, and then Wi-Fi fingerprints based on the Wi-Fi network maps that are available, like Sky Maps, and then the IP address. And so when you think about, I don't know. It's just so many things have to happen, yet they're all pointing to this house, and it almost seems like a default location more than anything, and no one really knows the answer. So I don't know. I guess at that point, you just have to kind of give up and move out. Or you know what you can do? You know what you can do? Print out this article and just post it to your front door.
Right.
And that way, when people arrive, you can be like, well, see, like, don't take our word for it.
Yeah.
Check out this
take
article.
Take a copy of this stack of things that I printed out.
Right.
Take a flyer. You came
this
for your
is
phone?
Our monthly flyer. Newsletter.
They should just get, people just should just send them their phones. Like, we should all, like, when we're done with a phone, we should send it to them so that it can just be like, here's your phone, and just hand them
here's
a random
phone.
Phone. Yeah. So they reset their router. That didn't work. Yeah. And the irony is, if they actually had these stolen phones, that would be one other key to solving the mystery. Like, if you, you know, the technology is in the phone to figure out why it says it's there and it's not there, but that's kind of, I don't know.
But they can never find the lost phones or the stolen phones to know, to be able to pull those devices and go, why are you pointing to this address?
So. And Kashmir told them to file a complaint with the FCC. That was her suggestion. So that's what they said they were going to do. So.
All right. Well, I hope my home doesn't end up the default.
I don't want that.
Too.
No.
I don't need people showing up for stolen phones.
I kind of want there to be a, like an elaborate story of a crime lord who like was wronged by the people who lived in this house when they were growing up. And so like he takes phones and just spoofs the location address as soon as he steals them to this guy's house.
Let's write that novel together, Russell Holly.
Yeah,
let's
I think
do
we
it.
Should.
Okay. You write the first chapter, then I'll Well, thank you so much for joining us. I know we talked a little bit before the show started about Crashlands. That's an app that you can't put down. Tell us a little bit about that.
I'm having so much fun with this game. It is an action RPG, which basically means you run around and do side quests as this little character who is this kind of slacker shipping guy who, you know, works on a spaceship shipping things from one planet to another. And this weird floaty-headed monster shows up and, you know, crashes you down onto this amazingly fantastic planet full of strange creatures and plants and stuff. And you basically work from nothing, from dirt and sticks and stuff into the appropriate technology to call home and get in touch with the people who are your employers so that they can come rescue you. And in the process, you uncover this, you know, incredible plot. And so there's all of these really fantastic things that happen, from, you know, building your little house to hold all of the things that you use to build things, to going out and fighting just about everything. And you know, the really impressive thing, because it works on both PC and mobile, but for the mobile aspect of this game, it's so well balanced that you can play for a couple minutes at a time and set it down, or you can just sit and waste an entire afternoon playing the game. The way that you jump from action point to action point is just really well balanced, and I just can't stop playing it.
Well, what else are you working on at Android Central that you can tell us about?
No, I've stopped doing everything. It's okay.
You already wrote the article.
Okay.
What now? I mean,
I'm gonna write another one in a month after I'm done. It's gonna be very detailed. I'm gonna actually be playing next week with the Asus Zenfone Zoom, which is supposed to be a camera with a phone attached, as opposed to a phone with a camera attached.
Nice.
So it's just this gigantic camera puck on the back of this phone. It's really fantastic and kind of bizarre. And I'm gonna play with it for a while and compare it to some of the other cameras that we've got out there right now. Because over the last year, I think for just about every smartphone manufacturer, there's been this really heightened focus on a camera, you know, being able to take great pictures and do stuff. And it's been really fun to explore that over the last year.
Well, cool. You can find Russell's work at Android Central. And I know you're on the East Coast, so stay safe when that storm hits you, and hopefully let's talk soon.
Absolutely.
Thanks so much, Russell. It's always a pleasure getting you on the shows.
Thanks for having me, guys.
You bet. Now, tomorrow's guest for the full episode, not just for the games check-in, but the entire episode, is Sam Moscovich. We'll be welcoming him back from Ars Technica to talk all about the tech news of the day. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 12 a.m. UTC at twit.tv/live. You can always be a part of the show by emailing us at tnt@twit.tv or leaving us a short voicemail at 260-TNT-SHOW. You can always hit us up on Twitter. The show is @TechNewsTodayTV.
And if you want to know more about our upcoming guests or get behind the scenes gossip, you can subscribe to our newsletter. Sign up at twit.tv/newsletter. Also, check us out. We have our Facebook page. We're starting to put segments from the show, short segments that if you know someone that might be interested in the show, you can share it on Facebook so they can take a look and then maybe download the full episode. And don't forget to subscribe to the show yourself if you haven't already. You can subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher, TuneIn, Downcast, Overcast, Pocket Cast, all the casts. Use your favorite. Use your favorite podcast catcher, and you can find all the ways to subscribe at twit.tv/TNT. And if you want to talk to us directly, you can hit us up on Twitter. I am at Megan Maroney.
And I am Jason Howell. Thanks, as always, to our live producer, Anthony Nielsen, all the folks as well who help us produce this show every single day. That's all we have today. Thank you so much for talking tech with us, and we will see you tomorrow. Bye, everyone. Ha ha.